Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the 8-Bit Adventures Podcast. This is episode 276. Once again, Elgato, you're letting me down. Stream Deck's letting me down. It seems like every time OBS tries to update or doesn't update, it seems to break functionality in all of the cool settings that I have all set up for the Stream Deck. So I don't know where the fault lies. But anyway, hi, folks. This is the 8-Bit Adventures Podcast. We're here to bring you the latest and greatest geeky news of the week. I am your host, Sean Hayes, and we have we've got a couple news items, mostly stuff that's been released in the past week. For a deep dive today, I am going to review a book, one of the myriad of specifically D&D 5th edition third-party books that I backed on Kickstarter that, due to the pandemic, took a pretty long time to get going. So very excited about that. Very high production value. Really, really excited to talk about that. Hope everyone's been doing well. I know one of the news items we have is a bit sad. Why don't we just get right into it? Because as I said, a lot of it's just like what's released in the past week. And in fact, one of the news items is just talking about those releases. So why don't we get right into it? Oop, there we go. All right. So first up, Black Panther Wakanda Forever is now out in theaters. Go see it. I have not gotten to go see it. I don't know. I really want to, but realistically, just with the logistics of work schedule plus toddler, and toddler's schedule, since he's now getting at the age where we're able to sign him up for activities. Suddenly, things are getting a lot more complicated for scheduling. So, I have heard very good things about it. I really want to go see it. Definitely go see it. I think it's reviewing pretty well. It is out in theaters now. I want to say it'll probably come to Disney Plus soon after it leaves theaters, as has been the case. So, out now in theaters, Wakanda Forever. Next up. This is, for those who are watching live, I have a graphic of Pokemon Scarlet, Pokemon Violet, which is, releasing next week. But in addition, and I don't have graphics for all of them, but in the past week, we've also had God of War Ragnarok, which has widely been touted as like a Game of the Year contender. And has a lot of like really interesting systems in it that I like just from a game design perspective. Even though, you know, it's not a game that I will probably ever play. And story-wise, there's a lot of interesting things going on. We also have from Square Enix, Harvestella, Tactics Ogre Reborn, sort of JRPG offerings. So Harvestella is Square Enix's sort of foray into doing sort of like a Final Fantasy meets Farm Sim. And supposedly they fixed a bunch of things from the demo. My hope is that's certainly the case, because I had mixed feelings, you know, after the demo. It really felt a lot more like, you know, kind of if they put a you know, farming mod into Final Fantasy 14 than like an actual farming sim. And that like really leaned into sort of this overarching story, like even more so than my time at Portia, which like does have a story that you follow and you're doing building projects to like advance that story. This is, it really feels like a sort of light JRPG game with a farm sim tacked on. And the Tactics Ogre Reborn, a remaster of a classic, sort of the predecessor of Final Fantasy Tactics. So tactical RPG, very excited for that. I had what was sort of a spiritual successor to it, Ogre Battle 64, on my Nintendo 64. Really enjoyed that game. So I would be very excited to pick this up. But I gotta finish Triangle Strategy first, since I have not finished that. And yeah, I'm so happy. I want all of the tactical RPGs, on Switch. I want them all, with the caveat of like if they're gonna feel sort of like a D&D-esque fantasy type game, or you know, or be interesting enough. Like, because there's a bunch of sort of like mech warfare tactical RPGs, and I'm sorry, folks, I don't like giant robots. You know, I'm not a big fan of mechs. I'm not a big fan of giant robots. So that genre is not for me. But you put a nice job system in there with some skill tech tree advancement. Mm-hmm. Yes, please. Sign me up. And then next week, you know, Pokemon Scarlet, Pokemon Violet. Question to you, readers, is which do you prefer? So Pokemon Scarlet is going to be all about, like, studying the past and sort of primeval type stuff. And Pokemon Violet's all about, like, looking toward the future and studying, like, futuristic stuff. So, interestingly enough, this is probably, I think this is the first Pokemon game in which there are version exclusive professors, in addition to version exclusive Pokemon. And the legendary also serves as your mode of transportation. So, I don't know if it will be a launch title buy for me. I might wait and see what the reviews are like. Although, you know, it may just end up like every other Pokemon game and, you know, the reviews are what they are. Where you find people who are very enthusiastic about stuff. I don't know. I'm a little worried about the jump to open world. Just like, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I liked about Arceus, but Pokemon Legends Arceus still felt like an unfinished game. So I don't know. There's so much stuff. There's too much stuff that's come out recently. It's too much. You know, I'm still working on my time at Portia. And then World of Warcraft Dragonflight comes out in, less than 2 weeks, comes out on the 28th. So, and then the pre-expansion patch just dropped. The pre-release patch just dropped. So there's all sorts of, you know, pre-release content in there now as well, including you can make your Drekthir characters. So, like, there's a lot going on. And I still, like, haven't played Xenoblade Chronicles 3. So that's where I'm at. So given that, like, even if I had a PS5, there's no time for me to play God of War Ragnarok. So. You know, I'll have to be content with watching streams of that and just, you know, following the story on like wikis and stuff. Up next, here is our sad news. So for those who are unaware, Kevin Conroy passed away, this past week, the legendary, voice actor of Batman for the past 29 years, I believe. from the animated series all the way up through various animated films, video games, even played Bruce Wayne in some live action series that DC did. And really just kind of became sort of an iconic figure of Batman and sort of the culture surrounding Batman. So definitely missed. This one kind of hits hard. So obviously wish his family well wishes and condolences. You know, to all the fans as well. So definitely, definitely a rough one. So, yeah, I don't really have much more to say about it aside from, you know, he will be missed. He was always a delight to see, at like videos of cons and stuff, of doing like voice reads and things like that. And all just, he had a lot of great stories and just, really in a lot of the stuff that he did outside of his work, really seemed like a decent guy. So, yeah. We wish our condolences and well wishes. And finally, Bank of America has downgraded Hasbro's stock rating, specifically because of Magic the Gathering. It feels that they're an overprinting of Magic the Gathering cards is causing value, like is basically like a short-term strategy is causing long-term problems for Hasbro, and seems to be destroying the long-term value of the game, and thus to such a degree that Bank of America has downgraded the rating it gives for Hasbro stock. So this means a couple things. Ultimately, it means that financial folks are kind of echoing sentiments from the community, from the Magic the Gathering community. Basically, Wizards, the Magic the Gathering team over at Wizards, has had a very aggressive release schedule. And part of that is due to, you know, there were delays due to the pandemic that basically caused stuff to not get released, and then it sort of backed up. And rather than just like backing everything up, they kind of scrunched everything in such a tight time frame. You know, rather than keeping spacing out, so that right now, I mean, sets aren't really given the time to breathe. And that like many sets are also staggered. It's very confusing to me as someone that like doesn't play very often, of like what sets are what, because you'll get some weird things of like the Baldur's Gate set came out and that's like a commander only set, as opposed to, you know, then there was like Streets of New Capenna released like almost directly after it, or perhaps directly before it. And that was like a standard set. But then there was like another set that released directly after Baldur's Gate that then overshadowed it. You know, I don't know if it was whatever the Dominaria United set was right after that. So it's like releases aren't given time to breathe. And again, I don't know if it's just a short-term problem that stuff got backed up, or if it's intentionally a very aggressive schedule. But also just a lot of really questionable things coming out of Wizards of the Coast lately. On Magic the Gathering side. Like the weird collector's proxy $1,000 booster pack type deals. Yeah, just very weird stuff. And it's also complicated by this thing where there's still this collector mentality, like this investment mentality into Magic the Gathering cards that you know, the original designer doesn't want. And I don't know how there's any reconciling that, you know, aside from, you know, Wizards does reprints in an effort to bring secondary costs down, like secondary market costs down. Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, the overprinting, I believe the context of that was the release schedule for sets and not necessarily doing reprints of things. So yeah, I don't know what this means for game stores, because like a lot of game stores kind of rely on stuff like Magic the Gathering to bring people in and get them in the store, like for events and stuff. So hopefully Wizards kind of course corrects on this, because obviously, you know, a healthy game is good for the game community. So yeah, that said, you know, I mean, here's the thing, like if the valuation of that stock goes down and then the price of the stock goes down, you know, obviously if Wizards can course correct, And you have belief that Wizards can course correct, like maybe now's the time to buy some Hasbro stock. Just a particular thought. You know? All right. So that's gonna wrap up our quick fire news for this week. So buckle up, everybody, because it's time to review Ouroboros Coils of the Serpent. All right, so what this is, Ouroboros Coils of the Serpent, is a kickstarted, basically campaign setting book made for 5th edition D&D, and done by Warchief Gaming, which is helmed by, we've reported on this before, it's, you know, Chris Metzen and... don't want to leave anybody out. So hang on. And Mike, oh, why? No. Of course, their website's loading slowly for this. Let's see if the book, if I can open the credits page of the book faster than their website can load. And it doesn't even list it. I want to say, maybe Mike Perazzi. Because of course it doesn't list it on their website. Because why would you do that? Just double checking here. I just want to make sure to give everybody credit where credit's due. But yeah, so I'm pretty sure it's those two. Chris Metzen, former, you know, I believe creative lead over at the old Blizzard Entertainment, is the sort of creative lead on this book and the lead author. This is a campaign setting that is essentially his homebrew campaign setting from when he was running Dungeons & Dragons games growing up. So this is sort of a passion project that has turned into a professional project. I gotta say, folks, the production value on this book is phenomenal. So I have a bunch of other, D&D books that have been kickstarted, and the production value is pretty good. But this is like, I think this is right up there with, like Keith Baker's, DM's Guild books in terms of quality, in terms of production quality. So it is a big old chonky book here. It's like 400 pages. So, well worth the price. The artwork, is a particularly high point. I was looking through the artwork and I'm like, man, you can really tell there's like definitely some like Blizzard DNA in this book. Because it has like a very kind of Warcraft, Diablo sort of feel to it. A lot of the artists, were folks that have done work for projects like World of Warcraft, Hearthstone, and like concept art, with Blizzard. So definitely has that art style. My art background of going like looking at it and being like, reminds me of sort of that style, and I was doing some research on the art team and found that many of them are either freelance artists or, either formally or do still work at Blizzard, and particularly doing stuff for a lot of folks working on Hearthstone and doing the artwork for like the cards and promotional stuff there. And of course, the art's fantastic. Like it has a very high polish to it. It's an example of when you get a group of people, like a group of artists, who have all worked with a particular IP before that has a very specific sort of brand quality to it. It's very cohesive. Because sometimes you see in a lot of TTRPG books, like when you get a bunch of different artists, they have different art styles. And if it's, like an indie project, or it's a team that like has a smaller budget, or if it's a particular, like a kickstarted project, and they're working with the team, they may not necessarily have an art director for the book that is guiding everybody toward one style. And so you often might get like a bunch of different styles in the book. And I mean, that's also true of that was certainly true of a lot of like Wizards of the Coast books. Even nowadays, there's definitely art that you can tell is by the same artist, and then art that you can tell is from different artists, and just very different styles in the same book. Whereas this one, it has like a very coherent, cohesive style to it, which I think, and it's not necessarily right or wrong, but for me, I think helps reinforce the tone of your setting if a lot of the artwork, even if it's by different artists, matches a particular style. It helps create like a visual language to the book. And it's often very difficult to do that with a team, unless they're used to working on a particular IP and sort of doing in that style. Usually when you see that happen, it's because like there's one person working on the art, and so therefore all the art looks the same. The art's gorgeous. This is a gorgeous book, right down to, the like the typefaces, you know, just the paper quality, a lot of the full page bleeds that they do with the typeface, like on those full page bleeds, is great. And just the, like the overall layout of the book is really good. As far as it being a campaign setting guide, I think it does a lot of great things. You know, I think it does all the things that a campaign setting guide should do, which is it presents the world and informs you about the world. And it does so in a digestible way. Because oftentimes, like, you know, there's... I mean, it does sort of get into a lot of, like, the nitty-gritty details. So that exists there for people that want it. It can get a very overwhelming if you're going to get down to that level of grittiness with your details. And I think it is a testament to the quality of the book that it does so in a way that does not feel overwhelming. So it breaks down factions, locations. I really like how it breaks down the information. We're providing like key points of interest. Like you're not getting, you know, every little bit of detail about a particular nation, but you're getting, you know, enough details that it tells you, why is this place interesting? Where are the interesting places in this nation? And what is interesting about those places? Like, what makes them interesting? Then in the second section, you get all your player options. So, you know, I mean, the main reason, like, let's face it, the main reason people want to pick up campaign setting books is what makes your campaign setting unique, not just narratively, but mechanically. Like, what sort of stuff are you doing with your campaign that you can't just do with a player's handbook and, you know, a little bit of imagination? And one of the most important parts of this book, and in fact, the reason for the name of the book, is there is a, we'll call it a system, even though it's, you know, it's like 10 pages of, it's really like a narrative system, that goes into the mark of the serpent, which is the Ouroboros. And so, it is really different from how D&D does things in that it is a free form. It's much more, loose narrative, mechanic, you know? So it's not like you're making a die roll, and then doing like set prescribed effects, and then you like roll, you know, damage dice or anything like that. Much more narrative. And so, and it has different degrees of power. And, again, sort of having a very, Blizzard DNA in there, it's as you get more power, it's also a corrupting thing. It also has like a corrupting aspect to it. So that like as you're gaining the benefits of this greater and greater power of being able to just affect the world, like impose your will on the world around you in a magical manner. It is also eating away at you, until you, if you pursue the power to its fullest, it is all released in like one big, potentially cataclysmic display of power in which you are fully consumed and become one with like the world and the cosmos. And sort of are essentially reborn, in that manner. But yeah, what I like is there's later on talk in the final section, which is about how to run adventures in the book, which I think is great. You know, there's a lot of the campaign guides that like Wizards of the Coast produces, you know, they have like little adventure hooks for their campaign settings. And they might do like an introductory adventure, but it's not really the case of like they talk about like how to run an adventure in this setting. It's often, you know, just assumed that like you'll read the Dungeon Master's Guide and then like here's a couple prompts to throw your way. This like kind of takes a lot of the stuff that you would find in the Dungeon Master's Guide for 5th edition and kind of puts it in there. So things like, you know, what are various things that you might encounter in various locations or types of locations or terrain? You know, it has a bestiary, it has magic items. Definitely a lot of, again, I'm going to repeat that there's a lot, like if you're a fan of either Warcraft or Diablo or StarCraft, you're a fan of D&D specifically, I think you'll really enjoy this book. A lot of the bestiary you can look through and be like, oh yeah, this is, you know, like this thing. Trying to think, for example, like Flesh Reaver are goatmen from Diablo. You know, Night Paladin, or the Night Paladins? Something. It was basically, I was going through and looking through and being like, okay, so this is, you know, this is seems similar to what this is from, and inspired by. And of course, like, you can do that, you know, kind of with any D&D thing. It would be like, oh yeah, this is clearly, you know, this is much very similar to this thing in this particular game and this particular game and everything. But I don't say this as a detractor, but I think it's a nice sort of evolution. You know, because obviously, like, you know, when I make stuff, there's common themes and common threads throughout it all. And so for me, it's a nice little game of like, okay, to try and see where things might be inspired from previous works, if that makes sense to folks. So to bring it back to the Mark of the Serpent sort of mechanic, in the How to Run Adventures, they talk about how to use this mechanic. And explicitly it states like, hey, this is a much more freeform mechanic. This requires talking with your group. Like, and you all got to be on the same page. This is something that, like, that D&D did not put in. Like, I mean, it's essentially talking about, like, doing a session zero. Because, like, this is the kind of stuff that you would bring up in a session zero. But, like, the fact that it calls it out and says, like everybody's got to be on the same page of, like, what do we want to do with this mechanic? Like, is anybody going to pick it? You know, if somebody does pick it, how do we want to do this? What kind of game do we want to run? Like, do we want to, you know, have a game where everybody has this power? Because that's a very specific type of game, you know, and that's fine. But we all got to make sure that we're on the same page and that there's also a bit of a social contract in, because there's a lot of narrative power with this. We should use it responsibly and sort of in the method of like sort of the unspoken rules. If you were doing role playing via forums back in the day, you know, back when forums were a thing, was there were a lot of, you know, unwritten rules of like, you know, you be a good sport, you know, you don't take agency away from other people. You know, don't God mode, essentially. Like that's poor form. And so the fact that it has a whole page dedicated to that is really nice. Because I think especially with D&D, there needs to be more of that. I think because of the fact that D&D like didn't even start addressing session zero type stuff until very recently, you know, I think putting it out at the forefront, with how to run adventure and like, are you like, if you're going to run an adventure, run a, you know, an adventure or a campaign or whatever, like this is sort of the setup work that you need to do. So I appreciate that, you know, and I like, and it talks about sort of how it's very different from doing things, traditionally in D&D and, you know, some other types of mods and stuff that you can do to the mechanics system. So yeah, there are a couple things, because this book was in development, and had kind of like already sort of been late enough in the process of like going through the printers and everything when D&D shifted focus from doing set ability score bonuses for, racial options. It does still have that, which is, you know, now no longer the standard design philosophy in D&D. That said, it's easily rectified at your table. And they do use the, sort of the old system of doing backgrounds where they provide like a role-playing benefit, which I prefer. I absolute 100% wish, or if we were going to, or if we're going to throw a feat into backgrounds now, that there were more role-playing oriented feats. So there is that. One thing, another thing that I really like is group origins. Now, I think Eberron or Xanathar's Guide might have talked about like doing like a patron, like a group patron, but really like it didn't provide any mechanical benefit to it. It was just sort of like a role-playing feature. This treats it sort of like a group background so that your group actually gets like shared equipment. Your group get like gets free training in a skill and gets like a group RP feature along with it. So for an example, let me see if I can get to that page. Because again, this is a mighty tome. It is, there is no shortage of content in here. Ah, here we go. So, group backgrounds. Backgrounds by location, group origins. So, Buccaneers, for example. Starting monetary bonus is 15 gold pieces for each party member. Additional starting equipment is a small shared boat docked in the city of your choice. Group skill bonus, which means you get free training in athletics. Group ability. Party members can sail just about anything and are considered to have proficiency in any skill checks that directly relate to performing operations or maneuvers on a ship. Okay, so, you know, they're a little more crunchy than, you know, some of the benefits of backgrounds. But let's see, where's another one? Okay, so Mystic Seekers, starting monetary bonus, 25 gold per person. Additional starting equipment, Wand of Magic Detection. So, like, you get a magic item for the group. Group skill bonuses, Arcana. And Arcane Awareness, if two or more party members are concentrating and making physical contact, they can sense magic within 5 feet. And they can also read magic script together. So this is an interesting one, right? So it, like, you might think it's a little overpowered because it lets you sort of detect magic at will within 5 feet. And also allows you to, like, read magical script. But, like, you have to be in physical contact and concentrating with another member of your party. I think that's really cool. Like, it's a really neat role-playing aspect to that ability. And I wish D&D did more stuff like that. So I'm like, I love these things. And I love the fact that it gives your group a cohesive skill set. You know, to say like, okay, like what do we do as a group? Like, what are we known for? And, you know, kind of giving them like a group benefit for that, like a bit of, you know, to help reinforce a group identity. Now I said, I, you know, thinking about parties that I've been a part of, yeah. And I don't know. I think toward the end of the last campaign that I got to play with that wasn't at the game store, you know, I think we might have gotten something that would have related to like jumping across different points in time, maybe, or something weird, you know. I mean, the one that I'm in, so the campaign that I'm in now at Purple Dragon Games, is Spelljammer. So right there, like there's an identity in there. So it would be very close to like the Buccaneer one. So I think that is, I think it's a great mechanic, you know, and I would love to see more stuff to give the group a better, like a cohesive benefit. And a thing that like encourages the group to work together, particularly because there are so many times when there is like intra-party conflict, like interpersonal conflicts in the party. You know, and I've had it in my groups before where it's becomes a problem when, you kind of ask like, why is my character still adventuring with these people? Like, if there's plenty of other adventuring groups, and this is also a problem of like campaign settings that canonically have like all sorts of heroes in them. Like Forgotten Realms, if there's plenty of adventurers out there, why am I stuck with these people? And if that's a question that your character sort of keeps asking, or like, why is my character still adventuring with these people when they could just join another adventuring party? You know, that kind of warrants a conversation with the group. To be like, why are we doing this thing? You know, and why is the group doing what it's doing? You know, and trying to figure it out. And you can either, you know, have that conversation out of character, you know, and kind of talk it out as a group, you know, and whether you kind of make a decision out of character, or you decide like, oh, why don't we figure it out narratively? But I think the group origins help alleviates that and kind of tells you like, this is what your group identity is. You know, and I think it's totally fine to develop that. And then once you've figured that out, even if, say, you're 7 or 8 levels into your campaign, then you apply it. You know, you could have it be as a, you know, for those of you who are really big on third edition and you missed your prestige classes, maybe that's a way of doing a group prestige class, essentially. You don't have it be like requirements for doing a particular group origin. You know, you could do it that way. So yeah, all in all, very happy with how this book came out, despite my name not being added to the Kickstarter credits. A little sad about that. There's a very pretty, although I don't know if it's a very practical character sheet in the back. It's got a lot of artwork in it. And my personal feelings tend to be that overly pretty character sheets tend to detract from the use of character sheets. So, but yeah, a lot of very, very strong, sort of Blizzard IP DNA in here. You know, I think there's a couple things which, you know, I might raise an eyebrow at, because I don't know if sort of proper consultation was done. Like, there's a kind of a shapeshifter racial option, you know, that I'm not sure if it kind of leans a little bit into sort of skinwalker type mythos. It's something where I don't know. You know, and I'm not necessarily saying it's poorly done or not. I don't know. It's one of those where I know enough to get me in trouble, but I don't know enough to how to fix the problem. Yeah, all in all, it's a really neat product. And it's just like, even if you just get it for like the artwork and the design layout, it's gorgeous. It's a gorgeous book. And the setting, I didn't even talk about the setting. So the setting is called Lawbrand. And what it's a collection of is, you know, sort of like in the same frame as the Sword Coast. It is a collection of independent, you know, free city states, sort of a post-apocalyptic, high fantasy setting, where, basically there were previous bearers of the Mark of the Serpent, that unleashed its potential, kind of created a cataclysm that the world is recovering from. And in the world's recovery, there's found a sort of newfound unity among peoples. And so it kind of pushes this idea of like kind of collectively rebuilding after a great tragedy, and using that as a unifying force. I do like that. I like that messaging. And, you know, it's one of those things where I do have to take a closer look with a little bit of a finer tooth comb, to go through some of the stuff. But, yeah, it's, well, 'cause it's, again, big chunky book to sink my teeth into. And unfortunately, due to stuff going on in my eyes, I can't read an awful lot at one given time. So I have to like break it down and do it in bits and pieces. All in all, I'm really enjoying it. You know, despite the fact that, there is a basically ranger subclass for fighter. I don't like that. You know, that's just my personal feelings on it. Like, obviously there's design space to do it in 5e. The way they kind of set it up is like Eldritch Knight, but make it druid instead of like an arcane type thing. It's just, you know, like the niche that they talk about in the lore is like, well, you know, I would just play a ranger if I wanted to do that. And then at the time this was like pre-Tasha's when this was first revealed. So it also had a little bit of like so we're really just erasing being a ranger, because now it's just, well, I'm going to pick fighter, and then I'm just going to tack on ranger stuff that, like, you know, are the things that most people don't tack on when doing ranger stuff, like spell casting and stuff. So yeah, that I think is my only real gripe. And that's just a personal nitpick. That's just because I love Rangers so much. But, you know, it's a cool subclass. Don't get me wrong. But yeah. I did find one typo with a spell where the cast time was listed as instantaneous. And I'm pretty sure it was supposed to be like either a bonus action or an action. Because yeah, there's nothing describing what instantaneous means for spell casting, for a cast time. Because like that doesn't exist. It doesn't exist for any other spells in the book. And they don't explain what it means in like the section for spell casting. So it leads me to believe that it's some kind of typo misprint. Which that's the only one that I found. So, and that's pretty good. So yeah, Ouroboros, Coils of the Serpent. I want to say that it might be available? Question mark. I know the Kickstarter wrapped up, and so they've been shipping out. It just became available to purchase yesterday, November 15th. Driz in the chat, group keeps talking about how to better give the ranger a stronger mechanical identity, either bake in the animal companion and make it a full monster tamer, or make it a trap specialist, play up the environmental control. I think you go the World of Warcraft route and you do both. Like, I think animal companion versus, you know, like, but you really play up the exploration aspect of it and using the environment to your advantage. And I think that's something other games have done. And D&D, just for whatever reason, just kind of throws it in with spellcasting and calls it a day. And it's like, I mean, technically you're right. However, it kind of means that they don't feel like they have their own identity when it's just, you know, druid light, but can also do fightery things. I think it's always going to be a constant battle too, of trying to figure out how to make it its own identity. You know, especially when, you know, there's things like scout rogues or, you know, arcane archer fighters, because that also kind of treads on the ranger archetype a little bit. So this book is available. There's also a companion novel that is also currently available. The description is: a group of cynical, hard-bitten mercenaries run afoul of Lawbrand's authorities after a simple job goes belly up. Desperate and on the run, these ragged outcasts find safety and belonging in their unlikely partnership. Always barely one step ahead, they cross paths with the Children of the Sun, a powerful new faith movement that seeks to topple Lawbrand's ruling church and purify the trade cities by fire. These are also things that are present in the campaign guide. Children of the Sun is kind of presented as like a sort of antagonistic sun cult. Very excited. It's a long shot. I would love to see if I could get Chris Metzen on here to interview and talk about it. But he's very, very big fish and I'm a very small fish. So we'll see. We'll see if I can. Because that would be great. Available now at warchiefgaming.com / Ouroboros. I will throw a link in the chat. I will put a link in the description for the audio podcast as well. So I'll put it in the notes that are in the description for every episode. So that's going to wrap up my my review. I'd highly recommend, you know, even if you're just in it for the artwork and the page design, get yourself a copy. Actually, let's see. Oh, okay, so it just takes you to Amazon. Hardcover price, $52, which is basically the price of a standard D&D book. And I can tell you right now, folks, the value that you get out of this book is like three times the value you get out of a Wizards of the Coast produced D&D campaign setting guide. Yeah, it is really like just by virtue of page count alone. I mean, like you compare it with, I don't know. I don't know what the biggest D&D book page count wise is. That's not one of the core three. Cause obviously the Monster Manual is probably the biggest one, but, yeah, I mean this, and just the, when I was looking through the information that they had on like various locations and various factions, and the kind of in just the little tidbits and snippets they had, way more informative and way more useful to me than what's in like existing campaign settings. Like the factions alone, they do like two pages for given factions. And that's like way more information than you get for the various guilds in Guildmaster's Guide to Ravnica. So. All right. Ouroboros, Coils of the Serpent, now available at warchiefgaming.com/Ouroboros. And if you back the Kickstarter, those books have gone out. So you should be getting them. So that is going to wrap up my review. So let's move on to Questlog. Questlog is where I talk about what has been on my to-do list, on my geeky to-do list, and set a new geeky goal for the next week. So, because the next week is Thanksgiving, there will not be an episode, so this will be for the next 2 weeks. My goal is to start working on comics again, like and actually updating the comic, but to do enough that I have a 3 week buffer. And my goal is to try and get back in the swing of things and really like ramp up so that I have like a nice big buffer, in case I need to take a break again. Cause I have gotten emails from friends and fans, asking like, hey, everything okay? Comic hasn't been updated in a while. And it's like, I mean, you know, things are fine. You know, just I've had some health problems. We moved, you know, and so just a big disruption to our routine. You know, and I gotta say, just with everything that was going on, I just didn't feel it creatively, you know. You know, and as much as I would like to say that it's my day job, it's not my day job. You know, and so, you know, I also, you know, I have to think about my mental health and be like, you know, I'm not going to force myself to do it, and then risk like hating it. You know, with the understanding that, you know, obviously, you know, I'm also not owed an audience, you know, for when I do put out stuff, you know, by any means. So, but goal is to get back on the saddle, get stuff going, and build up a nice backlog. So that way, then if I do need to take a week off, you know, if we go on vacation or something, there's still content going out. So, in theory, I would love to be able to do that with the podcast, but that would mean also like doing evergreen episodes, with like interviews and stuff and keeping them sort of in the can until I need them. And I don't necessarily have the throughput to be able to do that on top of getting a show out every week and doing other stuff. So I said, last episode, which is 2 weeks ago, that I would complete the 8-Bit Adventures, chapter one book cover. I'm pleased to say that I did do that. And I've also completed the book. So my advance copy, should be arriving at the end of this week. If, you know, once that arrives and everything looks good, I'm going to just give it a once over, you know, have some other folks look at it. See if any changes need to be made or anything. I mean, there's only so much that I can do because like the comics exist already. So it would mean also having to go back and like re-edit the comics and re-upload those edited comics. So I don't, there's not really a whole lot of editing that can be done. But once that's done, they'll be available for sale. So I'm very excited about it. It's, you know, and the fact that I hit my goal of getting it done for fall. Yeah. It's bewildering. And I'm sure it will hit me when it's actually in my hands. But I'm very excited for it. It because it is self-published, you know, it's self-made, self-edited, self-published and everything. You know, we're not talking, you know, this is not going to be the next Sandman or Watchmen or anything like that. Like, this is not a great literary masterpiece. However, I would like to think that it's an enjoyable read, you know, for folks, you know, maybe middle school up, you know, and just a fun little story. So that will be available. I still am trying to tweak the price and everything. I think I have settled on, it will be available for $15 plus shipping, because that is where I'm getting dinged on. So once I do the look over and approve everything, I will start taking pre-orders because it is print on demand. And so what I'm going to do is take pre-orders and then I will put in just a big batch order and then I will send them out, to everyone. So keep on the lookout for that. Keep on the lookout on social media channels for that announcement, but, it's coming. The day's actually here, folks. I'm looking forward to it. So, and you know what? Normally I do this for the outro of the show, but I'm going to, thank you, to everyone who listens to this podcast, who has supported the comic at any point in its lifetime. I could not have done it without your help. And whether it's, you know, whether you are a patron on Patreon, whether you're, you know, a Twitch subscriber, whether you listen to this podcast, whether you, you know, were an OG and you were going to Facebook, where I believe I was originally posting the comics, like way back in 2008, you know, and then to Weebly, and then, you know, finally got, you know, 8-bitadventures.com running in 2010. You know, if you went all the way back then, you know, thank you. You know, and just, in particular, shout out to WoW guildmate Flo. Just for the fact, it sounds absurd, but like, we made a deal one time of he would pay me an in-game gold in lieu of, like, we figured out what was the price of a WoW token at the time and how that translated into the price of like a month to month thing for patron on Patreon. And then he gave me that amount in WoW gold. So just there's a shout out for that of just, you know, creative solutions to things. But yeah, thank you, everyone. So that said, that is going to wrap up the show for this week. So if you'd like to see this comic and my other work, you can check out 8-bitadventures.com. Over there, I do post the VODs for this podcast, as well as my comics, my artwork, and all that stuff. If you'd like to support it, the best way to do that is to become a patron over at patreon.com/8bitadventures. Again, another thank you from the bottom of my heart to all of my patrons. Thank you for your continued support. And that has allowed me to keep doing all of this stuff, you know, the comics, the podcast, you know, being able to do, you know, sort of some homebrew D&D stuff that, like, hopefully publish someday. Finally, last but not least, certainly, is thank you to Professor Shy Guy for letting us use his track One Up as our opening theme for the past 276 episodes. Check out his work over at professorshyguy.bandcamp.com. He's great. Go check his stuff out. Chiptune artist. And with that, we are finished. So, gonna wrap things up here before we carry on too much longer. And as always, have fun, everyone. Happy gaming, and enjoy your pie cake.